Sports Ethos, New York Knicks podcast. Andre Gallagher. Apologize up front for any background noise you might hear. Can't keep it too quiet around me right now, but hands are a little full. But gotta talk about this OKC game. Gotta talk about this Miami game coming up tonight. I need you to hear me on this, because I said this back in, what was it, right around the All-Star break, and I talked to you about how folks were saying, hey, all the Knicks got to do is make the playoffs. Just rest everybody. Just make the playoffs. It doesn't matter what seed they are. All of that, right? What did I say to you? I said, that's nonsense. It's nonsense. I'm not saying it's literally nonsense that all the Knicks got to do is make it to the playoffs healthy. I'm saying that this fan base will sit here and tell you that, and then as soon as the losses happen, losses that are predictable, they will flip on you. They will flip on the team. It is a toxic, toxic fan base. I'm not saying every single fan, don't get me wrong, but too many of them. It is a toxic, toxic fan base. The fan base cannot take any losing. Any losing isn't acceptable. They will harshly criticize the coach, harshly criticize the players. All of the goodwill, all of the excitement, the love for players, it all disappears as soon as the team loses. You're seeing people, Jalen Brunson scored 61 points. I think it was 6 free throws he got. It was an insane amount of scoring without the benefit of the free throw line. And he shot over 50%. And you still saw Knicks fans complaining about the amount of shots he took and he's not a real point guard and blah, blah, blah. Because that's what comes out of losing in New York. Again, I'm not saying it's all the fans. It's just too many of them. And I've said this, and I know I'm like the old man screaming at the sky on the lawn, you know, clenching his fist, is mad at the world. But I think these guys spend too much time on social media. I think people, now Jalen's from Philadelphia, so he gets it, or he grew up, he spent a lot of time in Philadelphia. Josh from Maryland, I don't know. But I guess going to Villanova and playing in LA kind of gives you a little bit of this, but I don't know about all the rest of these guys. Social media, if you spend time on it, it will eat away at who you are. The best advice given to Knicks players is don't read the newspaper. I forget what player said that. As soon as he got to New York back in the 90s, they told him, don't read the newspaper. Because when you get too high, they love you. It's like you can't do anything wrong. And as soon as something goes left, they will tear you the hell down. That's how this city was built. That's how these fans were conditioned. That loss in San Antonio was a terrible, terrible loss. There's no way around it. It was a bad loss. We talked about it. But OKC is one of the best teams in the Western Conference, one of the best teams in the league. In the league. And this team is shorthanded. Did you really expect them to beat OKC? Did you really expect that to happen? The most you could have hoped for is that the game was close and was winnable. That's what I was hoping for. Before they lost to San Antonio and I went down the Knicks record or schedule and I told you all the teams, the chances they had to win, I said they had a chance OKC at home. After losing in OKC before, and the roster is a little bit different, but they had a chance. And that's exactly what they had, a chance to win. So they lose the game, and now it was 2 losses in a row. And if you read the comments on social media, you would think the sky is falling. How do you get like this? How do you get like this? They're not allowed to lose OKC? Are we just still upset about San Antonio? They lost to San Antonio. It's over. It happened. It's done. The team has 3 losses all year against teams under 500. Live with that. live with that. They lose OKC, and again, it's one of those things. It was a winnable game. They probably should have won it. They missed free throws in that fourth quarter. We could talk about troubling trends, etc. But when it comes to teams that are good teams, this team is all they are is good enough to compete against good teams. What did I tell you? I told you when Hartenstein is back, they're good enough to compete. They can compete with anyone. But they're not advancing in the playoffs. They're not going to smack down good teams with no OG, no Randle, with no functional bench. Speak of right now. Side-eyes Bogdanovich and Burks. They're not beaten. They're not going to beat good teams. All they can do is hope to be competitive, and that's what they've been. So why would you criticize them? That's what they've been competitive against these teams. What do you want from them? Now, I'm not happy about Jalen Brunson missing those free throws down the stretch of the game. Absolutely. But then he follows it up with a three. So, you know, that troubles me. Too many missed free throws at the end of the game. We're going to talk troubling trends. Alec Burks and Bogdanovich continue to be zeros on the court. And the Knicks cannot survive with that. They just can't. They cannot, not against good teams. And depending on the night, depending on the games that Hart and DiVincenzo are having, not against bad teams. The Knicks didn't have an answer for Jalen Williams, J. Will, the starter. They didn't have an answer for him all night. And they knew that. OKC knew that going in. He has too much of a size advantage on these guys. He was going to take advantage all night. Give Miles McBride credit. He had an excellent game defensively against Shea. But, you know, Shea hit a great shot at the end of the game. Now, if you look at the game in its totality, yes, OKC had a great game plan. I'm sorry, they managed the game very, very well. You know, Shea wasn't playing well. They went through J. Will. You know, they attacked with Giddy when they could, when they saw size advantages. They did a great, great job. But when you compare the job that they did versus Tibbs, which I've been seeing, the problem is Tibbs doesn't have all the options that they have. When you have all of the options that they have, then yeah, you can look like a coaching genius. But Tibbs doesn't have all those options. Alec Burks is not playing well. Bogdanovich is not playing well. These guys are not making good decisions. And you can blame Tibbs for not putting them in the best positions to play well. But to me, I'm always like, yo, show me you doing something first. Because remember, that was what people said with Grimes, right? Now, Grimes went out to Detroit and wet the bed with the Knicks, and everybody who has played in Grimes' position has played well. So let's not make the same mistake. And it brings up another thing that I said, and once again, all respect, give Miles everything. Give Deuce everything. You can give him all the praise in the world because he deserves every ounce of it. And what I'm about to say is not about Deuce. It's about how some of you, again, get too high and get too low. What Deuce has been doing has been absolutely amazing. But what he is not doing is what the Knicks still need. And you guys act like the Knicks didn't need it anymore because he was out there scoring 29 points every game. And I get it, but they still need shot creation in that second unit. And they're not getting it. And they're not going to get it from Deuce because that's not his forte. They need to get it from Burks and Bogdanovich, and they've been trash. And that trade was supposed to help the Knicks through these times. And I said this weeks and weeks and weeks ago. I said, you can actually attribute losses to Burks and Bogdanovich. You can, and this OKC game is one of them. The San Antonio game is one of them. Remember, San Antonio went on a 9-0 run when Brunson came out of the game. That's why some of you guys criticizing Brunson. They went on a 9-0 run when Brunson came out of the game in the fourth quarter. 9-0 run. Right? And then same thing happened in OKC. OKC starts the fourth quarter and he races a 10-point lead. And if you're watching the MSG broadcast, you saw Mike Green talk about how successful the Knicks have been when they have a lead going into the fourth quarter. I think it was something like two losses or something like that. I forget what it was because I poo-pooed the whole stat. Every time I hear stats like that, it drives me crazy. Those stats are irrelevant. Once is one thing if a team is undefeated, but once a team has lost, it doesn't matter. Something, a stat like that, like I'm not going to say this about every single stat, but a stat like that, it doesn't matter once they've lost, because there are nuances involved with streaks like that. Who was playing in those games? Okay, who were they playing? Who were the Knicks playing in those games? All of those things matter, right? And when you come into a game where you're playing OKC and OKC erases a 10-point lead immediately and all of a sudden the game is tied, that stat is irrelevant. Now, if the Knicks win the game, then that win goes on that win column. But that the fact that they had the lead is almost irrelevant because they erased the lead. Right? So does it tell you that Knicks are good at playing from ahead? Yes, it tells you the Knicks are good when they're playing ahead. It's a stat that you need to know. This team is very good when they have a lead. But that doesn't mean that they have an advantage of some sort. There's no advantage there. They still have to play the game out. And what's happening is Bogdanovich and Burks in that second unit are giving you so little. They're giving you so little offense, and I'm not putting this on Deuce. I'm not putting it on Hart. I'm not putting it on Dante. Those guys are giving you so much throughout the game. You can't blame them for not being great shot creators. That's not why they were there. That's not why they're there. But Burks and Bogdanovich, that's why you're there. And you can't do it. You're not giving the team anything. You're not bringing anything positive to the floor at all. And you're killing the team. The fact that these guys have not been able to create offense has lost more games than the injuries have, except for Hartenstein's injury. It's lost more games than injuries have. Because the Knicks could have managed those games if those guys performed just a little bit. I'm talking about just a little improvement. I'm not even talking about getting 25 points. I'm talking about, can you give me an efficient 10 points? Both of you. 10 each. Efficiently. I would even say less than 20 combined. As long as it's efficient. With a couple good passes. And the Knicks, they probably have 3 or 4 more wins. If those guys just did that. That's why I'm not putting it on Deuce at all. That's not what he does. But you need to understand that what he doesn't do well is why those guys need to do what they're supposed to do well. And they're not doing it. But everybody knows they've been trash. But you need to know exactly why them being trash is killing this team. They win OKC if they perform. They win San Antonio if they perform. That's just this weekend. And all this weight is being put on Brunson. Brunson was on a minute restriction in a San Antonio game. This guy is banged up, and he's out there trying to carry the team because nobody else can score, and it's driving me nuts. Driving me nuts. Those guys are playing so poorly. It's really no need for it. It's just bad decision-making. And it's driving me. Stop putting it on Tibbs. You want to say he can run a few more sets with Bogdanovich? Tell him to stop drilling out of bounds and throwing the ball off people's heads and stuff like that. He looks like a 34-year-old. That's what he looks like. And he hasn't looked like that all year long. But as soon as the Knicks need him to do something, all of a sudden he looks like he can't get anything done. And it's just ridiculous. It really is. But this OKC loss, once they lost to San Antonio, you really needed them to win this game. And I understand the emotions that some of you have that they couldn't win the game. But it doesn't mean that everything is falling apart. It doesn't mean that the team isn't who you thought they were. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. It means that this team has limitations. And if you don't know this team has limitations, then shame on you. Who doesn't know that? Shame on you, because you're an idiot if you don't understand that. But that brings us to Josh Hart's comments. And understand the difference between players and fans. Josh Hart's comments are from a player's perspective. They can't go this season just looking for the time that OG and Randall are going to come back like saviors. They have to play the season like they're not going to come back. They're not just holding down the fort. Their mindset has to be, this is who we are, and we need to improve within this bubble. This is our bubble, and if we're going to be good, we have to get better. We can't just sit around waiting for these guys to come back and then say, once they come back, we'll be better. We can't do that. That's a player's perspective, and that's the right perspective to have. That's not a fan perspective. A fan or analyst perspective has to be, this team has limitations if these guys aren't playing, because that's common damn sense. Stop acting like you're breaking new ground, breaking down the deficiencies of a team that doesn't have all of its players. But yes, Josh Hart is right. This is the team. These guys might not come back. Now, you guys wrote those comments and you got yourself all, you know, bent out of shape. You got yourself all riled up because you think that Hart was trying to drop some intel on you. And on one hand, yes, I understand why you can see it that way. No question. But you got to trust some of the reports. You just do. And I don't think the reports have been inconsistent. I think what's been inconsistent is people's understanding of the reports, which has led to, it's like a telephone game. People, you're getting your understanding from other people's understanding. Instead of just actually reading the reports and just keeping up with it and coming to your own conclusions, right? So this injury that Randall has is an injury that usually requires surgery. You understand? He skip the surgery because he wants to come back this season. You understand that if you get surgery, he's out for the season. You understand that, right? So if you understand that basic fact, if you understand that, then you know that this is an injury that is very, very, he is very, very fragile when it comes to this injury. And we thought he was going to come back with 10 games left. We talked about that a bunch of times. We're within that now. And the reports are the Knicks are just being really, really cautious with him because they don't want him to get hurt. They don't want him to get hurt before he gets a chance to do anything when they need him the most. They want to – let me rephrase that, because that probably doesn't really encapsulate what's going on here. They want to make sure they give themselves the greatest chance possible of a relatively healthy Randall in the playoffs, which is to strengthen the area around the injury on the shoulder so that he is as healthy as possible, has as good a chance as possible of surviving playing an NBA game, because he's a very physical player. So if they bring him back too early, their viewpoint is if we bring him back too early and we waste an opportunity to keep strengthening the shoulder, it might hurt him and hurt the team down the line. But if we keep kind of, you know, pushing the envelope, buying time in the regular season so that he can strengthen the shoulder more and more, then we might have a greater chance of him surviving in the playoffs. And I frankly, I understand it. I think there's also some politics involved where Randall might be on the market this offseason. He might go in a trade, and they don't want him to come back and look bad and hurt his value any further, to be honest with you. I think there's politics involved too. I think there could be more than one reason. I think you can have a list of reasons why you don't do something. And I think they also look at the schedule much like an objective analyst would and say, hey, we can get the 3 seed without Randall. And if we don't. But we can manage without Randall. I think that was how they were looking at it. And they should have been looking at it. Now, that San Antonio loss hurt. At the same time, Cleveland losing to Charlotte hurt them. So it's kind of, if we're just competing with Cleveland, assuming that, right, because Orlando's taking some losses too. If you're just competing with Cleveland, you both are kind of status quo on that. You know, you both took your little L's and, you know, that you shouldn't have, but so you're both kind of in the same place as far as that's concerned. And then Donovan is injured again. He's hurt again. So he's not going to play their next game. So again, every game is like a playoff game if you really want that 3 seed. It really is. Now you got Miami tonight. And we talked about this in last week's episode, right? This Miami game could be a loss too. I didn't think Miami's out there fighting for their playoff lives. They want this game badly. And the Knicks are kind of worn down, right? And they're worn down. They need guys to step up, and they haven't gotten it. Mitchell Robinson might play tonight. I said that I didn't think they necessarily need Mitchell against OKC because OKC likes to spread the ball out, you know, shoot the ball, shoot from the perimeter. By the way, Josh Giddey, he loves New York. Now, I didn't notice that, but every triple-double he's had has been against the Knicks. That's nuts. Now, some of you are going to make that about the Knicks. Oh, that's because the Knicks defense, and shut up. And it's because Josh Giddey plays better when he plays in New York. He wants to play here. I'm sitting here watching the game. And I'm like, Josh Giddey, I know he's had his ups and downs this year. He's played better more recently than people think. But I saw him playing. I was like, Josh Giddey is like, he is the prince that was promised when he plays against the Knicks. OKC fans be waiting for Josh Giddey to play like this all the time. I know. I see his stats. I know he's not playing like this all the time. I know OKC fans want to see this version of Josh Giddey all the time, and they don't. Like I said, he's been playing, you know, playing better than most people think. But still, not like that, clearly. Then he comes to New York, and he gets all his triple-doubles against the Knicks. Like, what? I couldn't even believe that. These guys be coming here auditioning. Vassell for San Antonio, same thing. He's out for the season. He's out for the season now. This guy had a game of his life against the Knicks. The game of his life. Efficient. Took the best shots he could. Every possession really broke down the Knicks' defense. You know, he took a bad shot in the regulation, but still. Excellent. He's out here auditioning. These guys be auditioning when they play the Knicks. You get the best version of these guys most of the time. That's why, and listen, I forget who said it. It said it recently. The Knicks get playoff type performances from people when they come here, when they play the Knicks. Because they know, especially at the Garden, they know if they play well here, it's going to be a big deal. And you've heard players talk about this over and over and over again. Come to the Garden, they get excited, they want to play well here. Hear it all the time. So the Knicks get like people's best all the time. Because people want to play well in that place. Right? I think somebody was saying that about the Lakers as well. It's true for the Lakers as well. They get teams best because they want to play well in those places. They want to play well against those teams because they know they're going to get covered. Josh Giddey is one of those guys. And again, Knicks had a chance to win that game. Before we get to Miami, let me talk about the end of the game, right? Shay getting a long mid-range fadeaway, contested fadeaway over Miles McBride. Let me tell you something. That's a typical shot. Does he have a size advantage? Yes. Has he played well against did he play well last that game? No. So if you got a long mid-range fadeaway from Shay at the end of this game to win it, you just shake his hand and say good shot. There was no genius in that shot. There's no genius in that play call. There really wasn't. There was a size advantage. There were several options on the floor that OKC could have gone to where they actually had an advantage. Jay Will had played well the entire game. Josh Giddey, I believe he was on the floor. I think he was a passer, but they had 4 seconds to make a play. So Josh Giddey was on the floor as well. Josh Giddey probably would have had an advantage on whoever was guarding him on the inbounds. Even if it was a big man. Which I don't have the play in front of me. I apologize. If it was a big man, he could get it back and drive right by him. And if it was one of the smaller players that were guarding him earlier, like Brunson, he can take him to the rack and score on him. So they had opportunities all over the floor, unlike the Knicks, who don't have any shot creation besides Brunson. Now, the Knicks also had less time on the clock. There was less than 2 seconds on the clock. I thought they should have gotten something going to the basket. I thought if they could have got something like Hartenstein catching at the free throw line, turning to his right shoulder and driving to the basket and taking chances because he was playing well and they were playing small a lot of the game. I really thought or Dante catch and shoot because Jalen wasn't going to have time to actually beat people and create space for his offense. It was going to be a catch and shoot, And that's hard. That's hard for a smaller player. And Dante's used to catching and releasing very, very quickly. That's not Jaylen's shot. You know, I thought he got a good shot off, but that's not the shot. That's not the sh you don't want a contest from a larger player on a fadeaway that they know that you're going to shoot. That's not a good shot for a smaller player. It was essentially a similar shot, even though he didn't catch it cleanly. It was essentially a similar shot to what Shai got, but Shai was on a smaller player, whereas Jaylen was on a tall. So as much as you want Jaylen to get an opportunity to win the game, I just thought it would have been better because of size disparity. I thought it would have been better to try to get something to Hartenstein at the front of the rim or something along those lines. You know, because they he had been eating them alive in the paint. But what are you going to do? Can't get mad at Jalen Brunson getting the ball then. But back to this Miami game. It's going to be a tough game. The Knicks are very capable of winning the game. Jalen Brunson's a little beat down. If he's got to carry the team again, you don't know when that, you know, when that well is going to run dry. And the injuries catch up to him. You know, you don't know. Now, whereas Mitchell was not necessarily needed against OKC, I think he presents an advantage against Miami. Now, Miami's one of those teams that takes full advantage of Mitchell Robinson's limitations offensively and condenses the spacing on the court when he's on the floor. But we'll see. One of the things that I was concerned about with Mitchell Robinson, I don't think I got a chance to talk about it, was the passes on the screens, the pocket passes. Were they going to feed Mitchell the way they were feeding Hartenstein? And you saw a little bit more of it. You can't do it the same way because they don't have the same offensive profile, but you saw a lot of times they were going to the basket trying to make opportunities for Mitchell Robinson. He wet the bed on a bunch of them. He got hurt on one of them. He hurt his ankle just landing, which is, we're not even going to that. He's not fully healthy. He doesn't look fully healthy. He clearly can't jump off the ground the way you're accustomed to. But it is what it is. He's out there trying to tough it out, trying to build strength. You know, I see a lot of people having no faith in the Knicks medical department because you're not getting communicated with. Understand the difference between the medical department not diagnosing people properly and not treating people properly and them not telling you what they're doing. There's a big difference. Okay, this is the New York Knicks. They have access to some of the best medical professionals in the universe. I have confidence that they know what they're doing. What you need to understand is they don't care if you know what they're doing. So please understand the difference. Just because you're not being made aware of their plans does not mean that they don't have plans. That doesn't mean the plans are bad. Okay? Understand that. So sure, if a player who could have been out for the season comes back, there is risk of injury. But at the same time, if you guys, I see a lot of people wondering if OG and Randle are jaking it, and are they not tough because they're not coming back from these injuries? Meanwhile, Mitchell comes back, and people say, "Oh, Mitchell came back too soon." This is why, again, it's a toxic fan base. It really is. I trust Mitchell. I trust the medical professionals on the team. I didn't think he should play in OKC, and he didn't. Who knows about this Miami game? I think they could use him in this Miami game. At the same time, Precious, it's a revenge game for Precious. So you don't want to be taking too many of Precious's minutes in this game because you know he wants some get back. So that in Toronto, got an attitude problem against his former teams right now. So a little Precious Achiuwa can go a long way, but I think Mitch can steal a few baskets away from Miami and give the Knicks a few baskets on the offensive boards, and that might be the difference in this game. But make sure you let Precious go out there and put his work in. You know, but again, this is one of those tricky games that the Knicks, they got to pull it off. If they lose this game, remember, I gave the Knicks 3 to 4 losses before San Antonio and then bumped that up to 5. That would mean they have 3 losses. This would be the third one, and they still got to play the Bucks in Boston to finish the season. So they're pushing it.
And then the Bulls three times, which can be a little shaky when you have to play that same team that many times. So they're pushing it. They got to tough this out. I'm wondering if they lost a little bit of their mojo, because one of the things that this team did is they had confidence in each other. And right now, I'm not sure if they have confidence in each other. When you see guys like Brooks and Bogdanovich go out there and wet the bed, it can steal confidence away from a team. It really can. Because they're not out there. They're like on a whole different program when they're out there. And yeah, they were out there for some of those other games too. But, you know, Brooks missed a bunch of games, by the way. And Bogdanovich, just having Bogdanovich out there is one thing. Like Brooks got that second halves and stuff like that, right? So you were getting 29 points from Deuce McBride. So if you're not getting like these bonus baskets that you really don't expect, and you got to depend on Brooks and Bogdanovich to get you points, and they keep going out there wetting the bed, you know, that starts to hurt the team. It really does. But this team played with a lot of heart in that OKC game, so that might be a little bit of fear mongering on my part. They really did. They came back in that game when it looked like OKC was going to take control of it. They played with a lot of heart and a lot of fearlessness down the stretch of these games. This is the same thing in San Antonio, but there comes a point where you start to lose a little of your mojo when you're coming up short, and you kind of pick and choose why you're coming up short, and point to guys who are playing and say, you're one of the main reasons for coming up short. You know, so we'll follow it. We'll see how it goes. Make sure you check out at Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, Andre Gallagher at The Watchers 7. Until next time.